Everybody, welcome to a lean and mean and, I don't know, somewhere in between Friday filibuster. This is Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
And we're going old school. It's just the two of us here, so riding into the sunset. So this is going to be a totally winged episode, so you can either stay tuned for magic, impromptu magic, or check out now. And I don't think I'd blame you for either. So I guess right two things, Mac. You said you had some comic stuff to talk, so why don't you go take it?
Yeah, it's really good news for comic book fans. After like a year and a half in Spider-Man, Peter Parker is now Spider-Man again.
Yeah, so was this a controversial – like did Marvel respond to controversy to do this?
I don't know if it was controversy or if it was kind of planned this way all along because, you know, the book sitting stands right now just in time for the new movie. But, yeah, for the last year and a half – see, what happened was – Peter Parker died, and the villain Dr. Octopus took over his body and has been living as Peter for all this time.
Okay.
Which is just awful.
Yes.
Sounds it's good. The most horrible thing ever. And so, but now that's wrapped up. That's over now. And the new Amazing Spider-Man number one is just hit shelves this week. And Dr. Octopus is gone. We're supposed to think that he's dead, but I don't think he is. Mm-hmm. And Peter is Peter Parker once again. Unfortunately, he has to deal with all of the crap that Dr. Octopus did while he was in Peter's body. So that's kind of what the whole setup of this first issue was. So I don't know if it's a really good jumping on point for new readers that they were hoping it would be. Also, the villains in this new first issue are pretty lame.
Yeah. Now, are they lame as the jumping, the leaper, something the leaper?
The leaper. As well, Batroc the Leaper is in a class all of his own.
Ah, okay.
Now, we have what's called the Menagerie.
Yes.
Which it's the White Rabbit, who's like a Harley Quinn type of ripoff character. There's the Hippo. There's Panda Mania, who's like a panda-themed villain. And I think it was Gypsy Moth, who has the power to control fabric. And they were the villains in this big blockbuster first issue of the new Spider-Man.
Oh, wow, all right. That doesn't sound super compelling, but I yield to you. So
it was okay, I guess. I wish the whole idea behind this comic book is that it's supposed to appeal to people who are going to be excited about the new movie and want to buy the comic. And I think that that's kind of a real misstep. Because the Dr. Octopus stuff.
Hello, gents.
Oh, hey.
Okay. Hey there.
All right. We got Daryl back here. Just wrapping up some Spider-Man talk. And just in time for the film, which I'll ask you, Mac, you excited?
I am. Yeah, just because, you know, I'm a lifelong Marvel fan and it's good old Spidey. So I worry about the film with, like, too many villains, too many characters. But I liked the last one, so I'm definitely – looking forward to it.
All right. Well, we're just covering, like I said, covering a little bit of the funny book. So, Daryl, you got anything? What have you been up to as we add you just now to the podcast?
And as far as that goes, nothing big lately. The last week I've been sort of browsing through Anthony Bourdain's CNN show, Parts Unknown, because I like food and travel show garbage. So, but the one cool thing about it is he goes to New Mexico, goes to Santa Fe, New Mexico, where I went to school, where I went to college, and winds up one of his highlighted places is my old haunt.
Oh, there you go. All right.
So that's pretty fun. But other than that, yeah, nothing much.
Nice. I'll just quickly point to the Parks and Rec season finale. I don't know if Daryl, you caught that.
I did.
So obviously, kind of a shake up at the end. They jumped forward 3 years. Mm-hmm. So kind of interesting. I kind of had a mixed reaction to the episode. It was an hour-long episode. I liked how they kind of decided to fast-forward through hilarious birthing things and, you know, the whole –
yeah, I think that was really smart.
That was pretty smart. Although I didn't find the episode very funny, to be honest. Like actually, like, laughing at that episode, which I've been enjoying the past ones, I just didn't –
it felt like
I don't know, like John, even John Ralphio didn't save it, you know. So
yeah, I mean, there were a few funny lines. I think there was a funny bit from oh yeah, it was the triplets when Henry Winkler was describing them having triplets.
Yeah, that's good. And Ben's reaction was fun too.
Yeah, there was some funny stuff, but I think overall it was more of like a celebration of the show.
And it absolutely could have been the series finale, right? I mean,
could have easily been the series finale, yeah.
If we all get wiped out in a meteor strike, I think Parks and Rec is satisfactory wrapped up its finale. So, and then I did like, what else did I find fairly humorous? There was a nice little Sebastian nod that was pretty good.
Yeah, the hologram, little Sebastian.
little Sebastian hologram. And then the John Hamm cameo, I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah. And then on that note, Community ended its season two, well, this previous week, I guess, but.
Yeah, what's your take on it? I kind of tapped out, really. I just, for some reason, the fire is gone for me. I don't know why, so.
Did you see the G.I. Jeff?
I never did. I think it's still on DVR. You saw it, Matt? Yeah, you guys go, you can talk amongst yourselves about that.
That's a fantastic piece of work. You know, akin in my, you know, as far as getting, you know, getting the voices, except Cobra Commander who died. But getting the voices and having the animation mistakes and all of that business, it was a G.I. Joe episode, from 25 years ago. And, it worked really well for me. And the season overall worked really well for me. There were some down points, but it was really all in all back in form, I think.
Very good.
Yeah, this final episode was a little clunky, but overall I think this season was an improvement.
Has it been renewed? Is it coming back next year?
They made a lot, at least within the meta text of the show, they made a lot of comments to, yes, they're coming back.
Okay.
I think so. They're probably hoping to get a syndication deal, so.
Yeah, that'll take them to 100 episodes.
Yeah.
Which is the benchmark. And in fact, Abed said at the end of the season finale that they'll be back next year, lest like a meteor storm or whatever the heck you just said, Dave. Basically the same line.
Now, so, you know, the other thing I was saying about Parks and Rec was like, you know, you hear a good amount about it, like in the message board and talk, you know, and it was pretty good buzz about it, like in the TV subculture. But if you looked at the ratings, they are terrible.
Yeah.
Like nobody watches the show. You know, I mean, despite Amy Poehler's omnipresence and like, you know, NBC and the good word of mouth, I think it logged in like a 0.9. Oof. I mean, nobody watches. I can't imagine what Community does. It probably doesn't do much better. So, it's just interesting. It's like, I don't know, Ron Swanson, he seems like he's like part of pop culture and he sees all these memes and stuff, but they just don't translate into viewership, you know? It's just kind of, I guess the days of must-see TV are no longer with us.
Yeah, I think it's just a different world now, and the idea that ratings are really showing what people are watching, I think might be behind us.
Yeah.
Because
why, yeah, but with DVR and Hulu and all of that, Amazon and all that kind of stuff, you know, where you can, especially with Hulu, where you can get it like the next day, you know, are they counting those towards the TV ratings? I don't think they are. And I think there's at least a portion of the audience is sitting down and watching those things. I don't know though. I don't know.
All right. Not too shabby. Okay. That's a pretty good wrap up. So we're making excellent time here. Stuff we got coming up for the site. Mac, you got anything of interest to highlight?
I just finished up the review of the second season of Ripper Street.
All right.
This is the BBC series about the cops fighting crime in Victorian England just like a year after the Jack the Ripper murders. And this show is really, really great. It's really cool and fun and exciting, and I had a lot of fun watching it. This season they've taken the attitude of just like, let's embrace the crazy. Let's just go nuts. And it has a real instead of historical accuracy, they're just going full crazy with just like, you know, comic book pulp adventure type of stuff. So, you know, there's a masked killer with a black mask and a cape running around in the shadows, and there's an underground circus with these deformed monsters, and there's these, you know, crazy machinery, and just anything they could think of, they just throwing into the show, and it's just wild and over the top. And I'm just really digging it. But the characters, though, it's not just, you know, Gonzo for the sake of Gonzo. The characters are all really great and really likable, too.
Yeah.
There's three cops. I think I told you before. There's, like, Reed is the brains, Jackson is the sharpshooter, and Drake is the bare-knuckle brawler.
Nice.
And they fight crime, so.
Wow.
Great show.
Okay. It might be worth tracking down. Daryl?
Yeah, this week I've got an unsung gem of the 70s. It came out right around the same time as the first Star Wars, and got sort of jobbed out in the history of movies.
Okay, I'm gonna guess. Can I guess it? Yeah. I'm guessing it's Sorcerer.
It is Sorcerer.
Yes.
New on Blu-ray. It's a Blu-ray. It's from Warner, the Digibook.
Yep.
And I hadn't seen it in probably 10 or 12 years.
This is Friedkin, right? William Friedkin?
Yeah, it's his follow-up to The Exorcist. And so with Star Wars is one thing, and then he releases The Exorcist and then releases a movie called Sorcerer.
Yeah.
I think audiences were really expecting something
far
Sorcerer, different than right. a hyper-real nail-biter about driving TNT across horrid roads.
Now, I didn't hear about this. I didn't know about this movie until I saw it being talked about for release. It actually sounds kind of cool.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
It's I don't know, outside of my favorite horror movies, it's definitely not a horror movie. Outside of my favorite horror movies, I don't know that there are any movies that are as outright thrilling that I've ever seen.
Wow, that's high praise.
No, it is. But like, there's this. You sort of, if you just describe the idea that it's four dudes driving two trucks 180 miles, that doesn't sound very interesting.
Yeah.
Right. Except that once you understand the stakes, that it's defective TNT, and that any kind of jolt is boom. Then every little thing, every bump in the road and every broken slat on a bridge becomes like the next, well, crap, is this the time? And it's well acted and everything comes across really well. I think it's Friedkin's best movie.
Oh, well, all right. Definitely high praise, yeah.
Highly recommended movie.
Is it long? Is it like a long 70s action?
No, 2 hours. Just 2 hours. Maybe even a little under.
All right.
It starts a little slow, and then once you get to the driving, it becomes a true nail biting experience. And it's exceptionally violent. Way more violent than you would expect from a movie in 1978. Or I guess not so much of that is. As much as it's PG and it's this violent. So that's a different time for the rating system, but you don't find PG movies this violent today, let me tell you that.
Even Willow? Not even Willow.
Even Willow. It's even more violent than Willow, if you can imagine.
I can't imagine. So I can't imagine anything more violent than Willow. All right, so I had a lot of kind of – speaking of Ripper Street, I had a lot of import stuff as well. So Acorn puts a lot of these, you know, overseas, TV dramas out. And I'm always interested because you never know what you stumble upon. I found some really great shows from that. So, I took a chance on a couple here. One is an Australian mystery show called Jack Irish starring Guy Pearce, which is like, well, that guy's legit, so I'll give this a whirl. So it's kind of a noir. He's a private investigator. I mean, it says set two, but really it's just one feature length mystery. So, and it's pretty good. He's an interesting character. Flawed, kind of a down on his luck private investigator, definitely not an alpha male. He tends to run away from fights more than anything. So the mystery itself wasn't super compelling, but Guy Pearce is a pro and his character was interesting. So I'd give that an endorsement. And then from Newfoundland, something called The Republic of Doyle. So a Canadian dramedy type of thing about some private investigator family, like a father's son. And it's, that one is a little more kind of mainstream procedurally. So, I mean, I guess St. John's, Newfoundland is kind of pretty, and there's some interesting characters, but it wasn't really like anything much different you'd see on, CBS or something. So those are two kind of differing Acorn experiences I've had. So in case you're interested, there's that. So, all right. Now, I believe we've got an updated upcoming release calendar, Mac.
Okay, well. Let's take a look.
Yeah, there's a...
And everybody listening and following at home, we're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. From there, we're going to find the link for the cover art gallery for May 6th.
Now, they are going full on with the Godzilla releases, aren't they?
They sure are.
They're pretty much all getting a Blu-ray release.
They are getting it, absolutely.
Now, Mac, you you reviewed the, what was it, Godzilla versus
King Kong,
right?
Yeah.
How was the transfer on that? I don't remember you saying how the transfer was on that.
It wasn't bad. A lot of the scenes looked, had a lot of really nice detail and looked really good. Some, you know, like a lot of older movies, some scenes filmed outdoors on location look a lot rougher. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the nature of the film and the cameras they used then. So it's kind of unavoidable. But there were some moments though, where, like, I'm thinking of a shot specifically when Godzilla is framed against kind of like a gray sky in the background, and he, like, really pops on the screen with a lot of detail. So
I think that's the important thing here, because, you know, there have been crappy versions of all these movies before, but they have a real fan base. For whatever their relative merits, Godzilla versus the Smog Monster, for instance.
Yeah.
Or Hedorah, but those people have been loyal for a long, long time to these movies, and I think they deserve a real good Godzilla transfer.
For sure.
I agree, yeah. For sure. It's like I said in my review, it's like, you know, this movie's incredibly cheesy, but it's nonetheless historically important.
I grew up watching, living on Godzilla, you know?
Absolutely.
I think we talked about this, but like the TBS Monster Morning something or other, man. I just lived off of that stuff.
Yeah, Rodan was on all the time. King Ghidorah, all those things.
Godzilla's Revenge is one of my favorites. It's the weird one with the,
Wait, is that the one with the little kid?
Yeah, the little kid's getting bullied.
Oh, man.
And he escapes into these Godzilla fantasies where he befriends Godzilla's, like, bastard son, and and they fight a cat monster. It's weird, but
it's a train wreck of a movie.
But for some reason, I just loved watching it.
My personal favorite as a child, and I am not ashamed to admit this, was Son of Godzilla. What was his name? Godzuki?
I don't know, the little Pillsbury doughboy thing.
Yeah, the little fat kid.
Yeah,
Godzilla's little fat boy.
That's right. I don't know, like, who did he impregnate to get that? Do we know? Do we know what the story is behind his birth?
I believe Godzilla's asexual, right?
So he
just has the one offspring.
I'm going to guess that Godzilla has sort of like weird old school gender values.
Gotcha.
And keeps his wife in the home.
I wonder if that was never seen. That's a good point. I see what you're saying. That's a traditional guy, right?
Can't fault him. I mean, this is the 60s after
That's right.
All, you know? It's not. It's not like 2013.
It's like Mad Men. Like, he's a Betty Draper.
Right, yeah. Godzilla's wife is like Betty Draper.
That's right.
And about as nice, probably.
Oh, Betty Draper's the number one TV villain. Watching Mad Men. All right. Okay, so lots of Godzilla stuff. In fact, there seems to be a lot of Blu-ray reissues here.
A lot of really
funky fresh cover art, like the Bourne Ultimatum and the Blues Brothers. Like this.
The Bourne movies are getting like comic book style covers.
Jurassic Park, which actually looks like a pretty hefty dose of features. So, so lots of Blu-rays.
You get the big red one. I'm a big fan of.
Oh yeah, I remember that movie.
Late era Sam Fuller movie. That's real strong.
Yeah.
On Blu-ray for the first time, so that's cool.
Son of Batman is the latest animated
direct-to-video
release.
I put a request on that. I don't know if I'll get it or not, but it looks interesting. I'm a Batman.
It's based on the Grant Morrison comics.
Did you read that?
Yeah, I did. Grant Morrison. It's pretty good.
Yeah. All right.
Little Damien is a controversial character, but you kind of start to like him after a while.
So I have another Blu-ray release for a movie that I maybe enjoy more than I should, Revenge of the Nerds. I'm a Revenge of the Nerds fan. I think it's very watchable. It's pretty rough as a movie, but I just find it extremely watchable. And I always love the frats have this competition, like, during homecoming, right?
Yeah, no, it's a fun movie.
It is fun.
Jefferson Darcy from Married with Children as the villain.
That's right, absolutely. Ed McGinley just brings it as a jerk.
He's a jerk.
And then what's his face from Bloodsport, right? The biker guy from Bloodsport.
Oh, yeah, nerds.
And then Anthony, what's his name from ER? He's
Anthony Edwards, yeah.
But yeah. My favorite is, like, during this homecoming at the end, the frats are competing. Like, so you got all these, like, alumni come back, and there's just all the events are, like, designed to be public, you know, public drunkenness is encouraged, right? Like, one of the events is they keep drinking, and then they ride their tricycle around a circle. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, go, alcohol poisoning, yes.
Yes, sir. Yeah, there was a lot. There's also the big, like, the like that space, I don't remember what it was, but it's when the main nerd, I don't remember who it is, what his name is, puts on the mask and pretends to be the girl's boyfriend.
Weird.
Yeah.
Which
that's creepy.
There's a lot of stuff in that that's
borderline. Like when they plant cameras in the girls' dorms, you know, and sit around and just gawk. I mean, there's that's a movie that probably couldn't get made shot for shot.
You couldn't shoot that today.
You could not.
No chance.
And I have
a weird
respect for it, even though it is offensive in so many ways.
It's super offensive, but it's 1983 or whatever. What are you going to do?
And I love how the girl says she actually falls in love with the nerd, you know?
Oh, yeah, right.
After that.
Of course.
After
that.
Because he rocked her world.
That's right.
Yeah, well, he's, you know, it's don't judge a book by its cover.
Guess not. There it is. So we also got Speed 2, which I only saw once. And I remember it being painfully boring. So maybe that's just me. I'm not sure.
Cruise Control.
Yeah.
It's a great subtitle.
Pretty good. I think they started with the title and worked back.
Well, and it's, you know, and the thing is it's pretty much truth in advertising, because with the success of Speed, they just went on Cruise Control made another one on a boat.
I think they misread who the main character or the main actor who was I don't think it was Sandra Bullock who was the draw in Speed there.
So bad.
Well, it was written for Keanu and her to come back, both of them, but he walked. He wouldn't come back.
Right,
so
that's
when – who was it? Jason Patrick?
Jason Patrick, right.
Came in and they did a quick rewrite, and so that's how that happened.
Yeah.
Willem Dafoe was the bad guy in this. He's not on the cover art, which you think – he's a big movie star. Shouldn't we put him on the cover? But I guess not. He doesn't have Jason Patrick's star power, I guess.
Veronica Mars, I did see. I enjoyed it. It was great fan service, but not much more than that. And how about Jungle Blue? I don't know how that one got past the verdict censors, but yeah, that's interesting.
it's an ape and the girl he loves.
Yes, he's got something. He's doing something suspicious with that banana.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm shocked that I've never heard of this movie. So the director's name is Carlos Tobalina. So I have a suspicion that it might be from the Philippines.
Do you see who's starring in this?
Big John.
Big John. So
it's awesome. Yes. I'm gonna definitely have to see this at some point. You know, in the vein of the Beast or whatever. Hopefully,
I got a bad feeling about what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah, it won't be the worst thing I've ever seen. I guarantee it.
That makes sense. Okay. Real quick, another shout out for a movie that would never get made again: Blazing Saddles. Right.
Oh no, but that's sad because
it's so great.
So great. Yeah,
so subversive, like that's great.
And what I didn't realize until very recently was the part that was. What's his name? The star of the movie, Sheriff.
Cleavon Little.
Yep.
Yeah, Cleavon Little. That part was originally written for Richard Pryor.
I think
Pryor helped write the movie, but all he wrote was like the most racist anti-black bits. So, you know, what an awesome piece of work that is.
And
40 years later, still totally holds up.
Absolutely, very is hilarious for sure. And Gene Wilder's like a comedy god in that movie, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, the ending is like the ultimate mind trip.
Oh, it's so crazy. Yes. All right. So, real quick, we haven't done it in a while, but what do you got for Inadvertently Sleazy Sound and DVD Release of the Week? Go, Mac.
How about Your Inner Fish?
Pretty good.
That was mine.
Nice.
Daryl? There's a lot of stuff I can work with here. I'm gonna go with that's too gross. I'm not doing that. I'm not putting images in people's minds. Do that to myself. All right, we're gonna go with Rush: The Rise of Kings.
That's good. I guess I'll just go with the layup, Ace in the Hole. We'll go with that. All right. So make it excellent time here. So now we'll just wrap up with our ambush topics. You know how this works. Random stuff we throw at each other for fun and amusement. Mac, why don't you kick us off?
All right. Well, in response to Spider-Man coming back from the dead in the comics, first topic is coming back from the dead.
All right. So because I don't think it's maybe been 2 weeks since it's been mentioned, I'm going to go with Uncle Frank in Hellraiser.
Uncle Frank. Bring him back. Nice.
That's the scene in the attic where he like forms up out of the blood in the floor and stuff.
Yeah, well, after yeah. when the guy, yeah, when the main guy cuts his hand and the blood goes on and
yeah,
the body
yeah.
reverse regen or like regenerates, but it's this amazing effect where they melt a big wax body and then play it in reverse to have it rebuild, and it's just it's a brilliant effect.
Really cool.
It's really, really cool. A little bit cheesy today, but it's 88, you know, what are you, or 87, what are you going to say?
Yeah.
It's a practical effect that's awesome. So, yeah, Uncle Frank's is one of the best sleazeballs I know.
Frank. I guess that's right to me. Let's see, Back from the Dead. Okay, this is a movie we kind of poke fun at. But I thought this was like a bizarre way to handle the story. But how about Lazarus from The Last Temptation of Christ?
Okay,
like a weird handling in a weird movie. But he kind of comes back and he's pretty bummed, I think, right? If I remember, like Christ raises him from the dead and he's just like,
wait, what?
Right? Is it The Last Temptation of Christ?
Yeah. Well, no, it's like that Lazarus reaction. He's like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah, but he's pretty despondent from
then
on.
Yeah.
Then doesn't like he get whacked by someone? I can't remember how that works, but
I don't remember exactly after that. But yeah, the whole scene is really weird, and has a really weird reaction.
It was weird. Yeah. So it wasn't like, you know, the Bible's pretty triumphant. Everyone's pretty psyched that Lazarus is back, but here Lazarus is not
Lazarus himself is not thrilled. Like, oh man, now I got to make dinner.
Yeah.
All I remember is that shot of like his bandaged, like mummy-like hand reaching out, and everybody gasping. That was like
really
freaky.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I guess that's you, Mac.
Well, back to me. All right. I'm going back to horror. With I was thinking about the Friday the 13th series, and everyone talks about what's the best and what's the worst, whatever. I've always felt that Part 6 is really the worst on account of how it's so boring and nothing happens in it. But as it's the worst of the series, it has one of the best coming back from the dead scenes for Jason, where he's in the graveyard and the lightning bolt strikes him. Or like he gets stabbed by some punk, and then the lightning bolt stabs or shoots the thing that's big metal rod that's sticking out of him,
yeah,
and comes back from the grave. Yeah. If only the rest of the movie had been as cool as that opening, but sadly, then we get into all of Tommy Jarvis and his girlfriend, and nobody really cares about Tommy Jarvis.
Tommy Jarvis.
No. No, Tommy Jarvis was terrible. And you know what? I mean, those movies are, as iconic as they become, are so spotty. Over all the other I mean, I would take Hellraiser 6 over most of the over most of the Friday the 13th. Four's the really good one, mm-hmm, and then I really like Jason X, but beyond that, they're really spotty.
You kind of have to view, playing the comparison game doesn't really work. You really have to view Friday the 13th movies as their own thing.
Sure,
you
know? Sure.
It's like they're over here in this corner, and then all the rest of the movies in the world are over here in this other corner. Yeah, otherwise, that's really the only way to enjoy them.
Yeah.
And some of it, you know, and when I watched a review, it was around Halloween, I guess, the like 12-hour documentary about all of them. And the directors and stuff, they seem to believe that they were doing something here. And to a movie, they're all really misguided.
Huh. Yeah. Well, but that's what's great about them. That's what makes them, like, you know, good, bad movies, is because everyone was really genuine about it, you know.
Yeah, they were.
They thought they were making a real,
right,
movie.
That's what makes a bad, you know, that's what makes a bad movie enjoyable versus, we've had this discussion.
Sure.
The Sharknado stuff, right?
So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay, I'm going to go next here because I have no ideas. I'm going to turn the clock back nearly 4 years, find an old Friday filibuster, and give you guys the option. This is going to be an ambush topic, okay?
All
right. So you need to pick a number between 1 and 4, and I will assign you an old Friday filibuster ambush topic from 2010, okay? From a 2010 episode.
each person gets a different one?
You each get a different one, yes. Okay. So okay. You will have
if it's,
to deal
if
with.
It's Yoda, we'll have to pause because he's in the other room.
No, Yoda. This is Yoda-free. Okay. So, all right, so Mac, you go first. 1, 2, 3, or 4?
All right, let's go with number 4.
Number 4. Okay. Cult members with terrible jobs.
It's oddly specific.
That's pretty good. Yeah, someone must have seen just something recently. So. Cult member with a terrible job.
Let's see. With a terrible job.
That's really hard.
I have no idea. I guess you could fire it up and listen real quick, see what came up with that.
Okay, well, we had the thuggy cult members from Temple
true.
Of Doom.
So what was some of their – they must have had some terrible jobs.
Well, there's the wheel contraption. Were they turning the wheel by hand? Or
yes.
Was it that they just throw a switch and it would go all steampunk with gears and stuff?
No, they weren't that automated.
Okay, yeah. So then the guys who would have to turn the wheel by hand to raise and lower the heart death bed
yes.
thing.
And I'll take you one step further. How about the guy who had to, like, clean that thing, right? Like,
yeah. Well, it drops it in the fire, so it's probably kind of self-cleaning.
I suppose, but there's gonna be, it's like cleaning your grill, right? So kind of scraping the hamburger meat off your grill, perhaps. So.
Yeah. Well, also, didn't Temple of Doom have the guy who was posing as the sculpture in the background?
Yeah, it's a sucky job, too. Yeah.
Having to just sit there and wait all day just for the right moment to jump out.
That's a terrible job. Just hold your breath the whole time. Yes, that is a terrible job the cult member had. All right, so go ahead, Daryl. 1, 2, or 3.
Give me 2.
Okay. Park Rangers.
Park Rangers. You guys were obscure in 2010. dang. All right. You're gonna have to give me a second here.
All right. Again, that must have been something specific.
Yeah, it has to be like a very specific thing. Oh, you know what? All right, so in the Simpsons episode where they Homer has to go up for job training at the on the mountain, like a companion, like a whatever you call when you work well with people. I never understood that.
Uh-huh.
Whatever you call that word, cooperation training. Yeah, team building stuff. I don't know what that means, but team building stuff up on the mountain, and the family, the Simpson family, mistakenly believes it's a vacation, so they all go up there, and the scene with Bart and Lisa in the cabin or in the tourist center has a. Park Ranger in it, but it also has one of my favorite Simpsons lines. So it's the Smokey the Bear asking Bart, who can prevent forest fires? And this thing, you or me. And he says you, and the bear says, that's incorrect. You said you, meaning me. No, the answer is you. And anyway, there's a park ranger there that explains some garbage to him. So
very good. You win. All right. So you choose one for me, whoever. 1 or 2?
1 or 3.
Oh, 1 or 3, sorry.
What do you think, Daryl? 3?
Yeah, go 3.
3. All right. Giant heads. Okay. First one immediately came to mind was what's-his-face from the Green Lantern, right?
Sinestro.
No. Herbert.
Hector Hammond.
Hector Hammond, yeah. A very big head. Not a very terrifying villain. Like a very large head, though. So.
Oh, you should see him in the comics. His head is like huge. It's like 3 times the size of his body. His
really?
Body
so, is he supposed to be just super smart? Is that his deal?
Yeah, he's super smart because he's got like this gigantic head, and he can't walk because his head's so big. He's in a wheelchair.
Ah, nice. Oh, jeez. All right. Is he like the Green Lantern's arch enemy?
He's one of them.
Okay.
He's also like fought Superman and stuff too.
Is he psychic too, or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Hector Hammond. So there you go. Okay, wrap us up, Daryl.
All right, I'm going with Urban Decay.
Okay. All right, Urban Decay. I mean, this is probably RoboCop, the topic, but something else.
Well, there's all the craziness that went down in Death Wish 3.
All right, do tell.
This is kind of an undiscovered cult film waiting to happen. You think Death Wish sequel, yeah, whatever. But you put it in and watch it, and it is insane. Basically, what's his name? Charles Bronson,
yes.
Moves into a new neighborhood, and it's just really run down. It's just completely trashy neighborhood, and all the old folks are like being tormented by these street gangs. And street gangs, you've got the guy with the reverse mohawk, so he's like the bald stripe in the middle of his head. He's the gang leader. And there's this like huge black guy with the dreadlocks, and at one point Charles Bronson like punches the huge muscle bound black guy, and the black guy just falls over, even though he's like twice as big as Charles Bronson. And of course there's the giggler who's constantly laughing, and he gets shot. And then all the gang members are all sad, and they're like, "Oh, he got the giggler," and it ends, the whole final third of the movie is just this one huge gunfight all up and down the crappy city block. And it just goes on and on and on and on with just everybody shooting everybody. It's just, it's completely insane. You wouldn't think that Death Wish 3 was just this crazy maniac movie, but it really is.
Nice. All right. Well, I'm going to continue. I'm going to sneak in another Brazen Willow reference. Tears Lean. Yes, the magical castle they go to for refuge, and it's just filled with troll dung and frozen noblemen. So yeah. that is a decayed urban environment for sure.
Frozen in those weird glass cube things.
That's true. Which I think there was a deleted scene that talked more about that. So,
oh,
yeah, if you're interested. So,
all right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and go with basically the whole bit of the cult classic 1979 movie, The Warriors.
Ah, yeah.
Oh, yes. Great movie.
Where it's themed gangs fighting around a dystopian New York.
Yes.
Awesomely, with chains and bats and ridiculous sayings.
Very good.
Coolest gang, the Baseball Furies.
Yeah,
right?
I think so.
Baseball Furies, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is a generally cool movie. That was way to bring the nostalgia back for this episode. Very good. So, all right. That's it. That is the end of this Friday Filibuster. So thank you, Daryl, for hopping on last minute. So, because
sure.
Who knows what Mac and I were going to come up with. So who knows what we're going to riff on. Maybe the Raid 2 again. So, which you probably haven't seen yet, right?
I have not. I'm looking much forward to it.
Yes. So, all right. That's it. So Mac, Daryl, thanks. Friday Filibuster at DVDvert.com is the email address. And Mac, take it away.
Can you dig it?